Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk, intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
Well, welcome back, and thank you for tuning in to catch my drift this morning, or this afternoon, and joining in the studio, as often, Brandon Drake. Brandon, welcome.
Wait a minute. This isn't the methadone clinic? I'm in the wrong spot. But thank you for inviting me in.
Also joining us today, County Commissioner for Washtenaw, Dan Smith. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, Gary. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good. Well, we're going to get into a little bit on the bond issue. We broke this story, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, and it hasn't gotten a lot of play. I don't think a lot of people understand or know about it. So I'm glad that you contacted me and that we can now kind of at least get the word out there a little bit. So, but before we delve into that, let's take care of our sponsor this half hour is Aero Facility Services. That's AARO Companies. Aero Facility Services has been taking care of your management and facility needs at businesses since 1945. And right now, they are hiring some people to do basic cleanup, banks and businesses. So you can reach Vicki Fisher at Aero Companies, that's AAROcompanies.com, or Vicki at AAROcompanies.com. And you can also call their main number, 586-759-3700. And it's nice that a company is actually hiring, and they're advertising with us to hire, which is pretty cool. So, and I will also mention that the Current newspaper is hiring a salesperson. So if you're interested in that, you can call me, 734-629-6010, or go to the website, currentonline.com, and you can contact us through that. So, gentlemen, welcome. Let's talk a little bit about this massive bond, Dan, that $345
million? Yep, $345 million, truth be told, is kind of a worst-case scenario. It's a procedural type of thing. We have to give public notice, and so that if the number actually came in higher, we don't want to start the process over again. So when they put together all the estimates, they always take the worst-case scenario, and that's how we came up with $345 million. The actual number, if this proposal sees the light of day, will probably be substantially less. So $290 million is substantially less when you're talking $345 million. It's still a lot of money, no doubt about it. But
so nobody can pad a little extra money in there for something untoward by chance?
Or no. The state law, this is specifically for unfunded retiree pension and retiree health care liabilities. So there can't be other things in there. One thing that can be part of the whole bond issue is the expense of actually doing the bond issue itself. But other than that, there aren't any pads going in there for other types of things.
Okay, so can you tell me the difference between allowing our unfunded liabilities to continue like they have for pension and benefit programs versus putting it into the bond? What's the difference?
So it's a result of the nearly 11-year contracts that we talked about earlier this spring. I was here with you back in March or April when this had happened. And as we discussed back then, the plans have been closed, or they will be closed January 1st, 2014, and we are switching to the defined contribution plan. So there is no more pension. There's a 457, which is like a 401k, and the similar thing for the retiree health care benefit that will be put into a fund that will be turned over to the retiree after a certain period of time. So we are not digging the hole any deeper, but it's a pretty deep hole as far as that goes. So then what has happened is this unfunded amount has been built up over time. We've closed the plan. The actuaries tell us that since the plan's closed, instead of paying off the unfunded liability over 27 years, which is what we were doing with an open plan, the actuaries say we have to pay it off over 10 years. So imagine getting a mortgage on a piece of property, a 25-year mortgage versus a 10-year mortgage. Your monthly payment is going to be a lot higher. So it's called an annual required contribution that we have to make to the pension and the health care plans shot up about $10 million between 2013 and next year, 2014, with the closed plan. And a $10 million spike in a budget of $100 million, 10%, that's a pretty big spike.
Okay. So we also talked about the county commission was thinking of putting a little money aside out of that, too, for investment.
So the way the bond is going to work, or the proposal that we've now delayed twice, so is we are going to borrow the money all at once. And the reason for borrowing it all at once is, first of all, to take advantage of the legislation before it sunsets, and second of all, to lock in the historically low interest rates today. Well, even historically low interest rates on this bond issue, we're going to be paying in the neighborhood of 4%, and it's a little different because we're going to make some bonds callable, so they'll be shorter, higher interest rate on callable bonds, and some will be longer term. We're using an average of 4%. Well, 4% on $345 million is an awful lot of interest, $14 million or so interest. So we got to come up with that interest payment somehow. So the proposal is to take the proceeds of the bond and invest them in the equity market and the bond market and try and earn upwards of 6% on that. And what that does is it lowers the overall bond issue, because we hope we are making this 2% difference on what we're paying for and what we're getting, and covers the interest payment then. Okay.
The key word for there for me is
hope.
Hopefully.
Yes. You know,
a lot of hope.
Frankly, I don't care if we're talking bonds, if we're talking the stock market. I'm not sure that gambling, basically, is what you should be doing with that kind of money. But
Hey, Dan, in a nutshell, could we say that this is a liquidity crisis, if you will, and we've stopped the bleeding in that it's now gone to a defined contribution plan, and
will be going to a defined contribution.
Will be, and the healthcare benefits have been turned over to the retiree. So, in a sense, the bleeding is stopped, but in the short term, we have a liquidity crisis, and we're kind of borrowing money to kick the can down the road a little bit to buy time.
So, not so much liquidity as cash flow, but yes, the other parts are indeed true. So, can we get rid of the investment? So it's a cash flow thing. We don't have
that's what I mean by liquidity.
Cash flow right. To make that to handle that $10 million spike today. We want to take that $10 million spike, and of course that $10 million spike is for the next several years, and we want to spread that over a 25-year period rather than handling it all in the next 5 to 7 years.
Right.
So yes, that's what we're trying to deal with.
We're refinancing.
The phrase that's been then picked around is the restructuring of the liabilities.
This is like buying a house on a subprime mortgage, in a sense, and the balloon payment is due.
And you refinance the balloon payment.
Right.
Yes.
And in this case, it looks like we will be able to do it, as opposed to during the housing crisis when the subprime borrowers couldn't.
The difference is typically when you buy a house, you have a physical asset that backs the money that you borrowed here. And typically when municipalities issue bonds, they go and build a building with the bond proceeds, or they buy a piece of fire apparatus with the bond proceeds. All right, this would be, so the
there's no underlying asset.
There's no underlying asset here. The underlying asset is going to be the equities and bonds, which we then take from the proceeds, and that will be the underlying asset. So we don't have a building. So in that respect, so the balloon payment refinancing is indeed a correct analogy, but in another correct analogy also is you're going and taking out the mortgage on your house and taking all that money and putting it in the stock market.
Yeah, because we promised a lot of people a lot of money, and so they're not really an asset per se.
Right.
They're people we have to pay off. They're a liability we have to pay off.
Yes. Yes. We have already, got our value, if you will, out of these
right.
people while they were working for the county, and this was part of the benefits that were promised to them. They negotiated these benefits, presumably took lower wages because they were expecting a pension, these healthcare things. So, but yes, they are now retired or will be retired in the next 10 years or so.
So how does this affect, though? I mean, in essence, we're borrowing money to pay a debt, right? So how does this affect, God forbid this should ever happen, what if Washtenaw County got itself into financial straits like Detroit has done, and if we went to bankruptcy court and under the bond, do we have to pay that as opposed to if we just had liabilities for past retirees?
There you go. That's one of the problems with this approach. The phrase that we use for the current liabilities is a liability, or maybe a soft liability, if you will, because it's in the form of a pension and the healthcare promises, all right? There is nothing that is demanding that we pay those. I understand there's constitutional protections and so on, but as you say with the city of Detroit, municipalities routinely, if you will, don't fulfill those liabilities in one way, shape, or form or another. That's dramatically different from a bond coupon payment.
Right.
And it's a little bit more difficult to come up with a personal finance analogy here. Maybe an analogy would be you promise your kid you're going to pay for their college education. So now you created a liability with that promise, but that's a different type of liability than that mortgage payment that you must make every month.
Right.
So issuing the bonds is like that mortgage payment. We must pay those bond coupons every single month, no matter what.
Now, when you say we must pay, is the bond backed up by any physical asset whatsoever as far as with a bondholder seek recourse against, we've used the term building before, and I think you said no, the bond isn't.
Right.
We're not buying a building with the bond. I know that. But if I invested in this bond and the county defaulted, is there any physical asset or anything I can put a claim on?
No, it's the full faith and credit of the county.
To tax?
Yes.
Okay.
And ultimately back on all the taxpayers. So the full faith and credit of the county. And these worst case scenarios, they get discharged through bankruptcy courts or emergency managers and all those types of things. And Washtenaw County isn't anywhere close to any of those types of scenarios. But you were asking about some worst case scenarios. We're far, 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 far away from that. Relatively speaking, Washtenaw County is in a very good financial situation relative to a large number of municipalities throughout the state and the country.
But high property taxes too, right? And they're just probably going to go up.
4.5 mils of property taxes. The proposal, this bond proposal, does not involve an increase in property taxes. At least that's not part of what's on the table. We are going to fund this through our current revenue stream.
All this really does is makes the county's position less flexible when it comes to pensions and benefits. Should there ever be a problem, we wouldn't be able to have the flexibility to tell pensioners, you know what, you're going to have to take a little less.
Right. And the pension, perhaps not so much as on the healthcare side of things. Okay. The healthcare side of things certainly has a lot of unknowns with regards to the Affordable Care Act and how that is actually going to get rolled out and implemented in the next several years. And if the state government or the federal government says, well, we're assuming all these healthcare things and there's no longer a need for personal private health care, then the notion of a retiree health care program really doesn't make sense. Medigap insurance, all those types of things might just disappear because we have a health care system across the country that everyone can participate in. And so there wouldn't be a need for that thing. So that liability would be absorbed by the state or federal government, if you will, on that health care thing. We're trying to account for that in the bond proposal by making some of the bonds callable. So after 9 years or so, we could call those bonds back. Now, the price you pay for that is a higher interest rate on those bonds.
Okay, so I guess for me, from the way you've explained it, from what I've read on the issue, I don't like the inflexibility. I don't like locking ourselves into a debt when, you know, worst case scenario. And again, I know it's Washtenaw is very healthy. We got a good growth. Everything's really good. But it's the idea of the lack of flexibility. The other thing is, this is being voted on by county commissioners. It's not an issue that the public gets to take a vote on.
The reason for that is because there is no tax increase involved. Typically, when a municipality bonds, they're looking to do something new, build a new building, buy a new piece of fire apparatus, and they're looking to go above and beyond what they're currently doing. So this, Gary, from Northfield Township, we went and voted on a bond issue to fund a new public safety building.
Okay.
And we went and voted on that, and that's a new building, and so that's why it typically is before the voters, is because it's a tax increase. Since we are going to fund this from current tax revenue, that's why there's no law requiring it to be put in front of the voters.
Yeah, but that's the plan right now. No tax increase right now, but that could change down the road if conditions change in the economy, et cetera, right?
We don't have the ability to unilaterally raise taxes. The Board of Commissioners does not have that ability.
No, but
Money is fungible at some level, and yes, you can vote on a tax increase for a certain particular dedicated service, and that frees up money from the general fund, which is currently supporting that service. That certainly could be brought forward at some point.
Well, we got a caller, Doug Smith from the Michigan Watchdogs Association, calling in about the bond issue. So let's welcome him to the show. Doug, welcome. How are you?
Hi. I have a question for Dan, which is, the way this works, they're basically putting the money into the intermediate trust, and then the intermediate trust from there on has responsibility for paying into the retirement accounts. The county then takes over just paying to the bondholders, right? But what happens if 20 years down the road, the intermediary trust runs out of money? Now you have to be starting to put money back into the retirement account at the same time you're still responsible to the bondholders.
That's correct. There's a number of different scenarios that we've talked about and explored, and you were mentioning some worst-case scenarios here. Well, it is instructive to think of some of these worst-case scenarios. We don't have to go too far back in history to look at a worst-case scenario in our backyard with General Motors. All right, people that bought General Motors bonds didn't imagine in a million years that GM would default on bonds. Now, you're always taking a risk when you buy a stock. Everybody knows that. But a bond, a corporate bond from GM, come on. And it would be just like today, going and buying a GE bond or an AT&T bond. I mean, you're looking at these companies. They've been around a long time. They're not going to default. Yet, it happened with GM. So these worst-case scenarios, while they are kind of worst-case scenarios and out there, they're certainly not out of the realm of possibility.
What if we don't issue the bond?
Well, that's the downside, and it's been a bit of a frustrating experience over these past several weeks because there's only been two alternatives presented by our administration, and alternative A is issue the bonds, or alternative B is dramatic cuts to county government, really decimating county government, and it impacts a wide variety of services across the board.
So you're saying cut county services but continue to pay off the retirees.
And that's the only way we could do that. We would have to dramatically reduce county services to the tune of somewhere around 70-plus employees and really impacting every level of county government.
So you can't reduce the payments to the retirees whatsoever. Off the table.
There's constitutional protections, and then we also, as just mentioned a few minutes ago, we recently signed almost 11-year collective bargaining agreements with the vast majority of our employees that provide for these types of benefits. So,
but all that goes off the table if there's an emergency financial manager. Again, probably never going to happen, but...
Because, Gary, you're kind of advocating forget the bond because you don't want that inflexibility. And let's deal with reality right now.
That's the way I look at it.
Right.
That's just me. I mean, Dan, how's the board actually looking on this? Are they for it? Are they against
it? Well, this was scheduled for two different votes, and it's been delayed both times. This was scheduled for an initial vote in May, and that was delayed. And then we were supposed to have a vote this past Wednesday on July 10th, and that was also delayed, various reasons why they're delayed. But the result of those things is we are now going to really take a serious look at seeing what other alternatives we can come up and work through so that we don't have to issue $345 million in bonds or $290 million, whatever the number comes up to be, and we don't have to decimate county government. Can we find something in between here to account for the cash flow problem, the liquidity problem, and not chop county services across the board everywhere? That really does have an impact on a lot of different people's lives, and you really don't know you need that until you need it.
I've got the answer. We'll have a bake sale.
So, Doug, you're still there, right?
Dan, if I can ask another question.
Yeah, go ahead, Doug.
Even if it's not required that you put it on the ballot, with something that's going to affect the county for 25 years, don't you think that the voters have a right to have it on the ballot?
The voters have a right to have it on the ballot. I'm telling you what the laws of the state of Michigan are regarding this, and I explained just a minute ago why it's not on the ballot. Can the county commission decide to bring this to the voters directly? Certainly they can. And that takes five votes to do it from amongst my colleagues, and that could be a very... something that we indeed discuss in the next weeks and months as this moves forward. Right now, it's kind of moot because we're not actively exploring this bond option as we were just a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. So I guess, Doug, if people are against it, and I'm kind of getting the gist that you are, like me, against it, what are you going to do as Michigan watchdogs? Are you out alerting people to this this issue?
We are organizing. If the resolution is passed, we will have 45 days to collect 15,000 signatures to put it on the ballot. So we're organizing volunteers who will circulate petitions with us and gather those 15,000 signatures. We're going to be at the Ann Arbor Art Fair from July 17th through 20th, and we'll have a booth on Liberty Street near Division. And we will be recruiting more petition circulators and discussing with anyone who would like to the issue of the bond. And so that we'll be prepared if they do pass the resolution to try to put it on the ballot.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, I'm with you. Until I get some more information, I'm kind of not for this.
And to Mr. Smith's comments, one of the reasons for the board proactively putting on the ballot is we have a little bit more control of the time frame. We don't have this 45-day window that we're dealing with. We could get it on the November ballot, for example, if we so chose to do that. If we don't vote on this until August, the notice of intent to issue bonds, then the 45-day window doesn't end until the middle of September. And depending on the way the exact timing comes out and when we vote on it, we could miss the November ballot and it would then be on the February ballot into 2014. So that would be a reason for us to say, well, let's go put it on the November ballot now because we have better control over the timing.
Right. And I'll tell you what, from my standpoint, I don't like special elections. I don't like... I'd prefer them to be on a general election in November because I think more people have a say, than these special elections.
But
I agree with that.
The other reason, I mean, there's both pros and cons to putting it on the ballot. As we've talking about this, this is obviously a very complex issue with lots of different ramifications, right. And you can make an argument from different people that this is why I'm elected, my colleagues are elected, to sort through this and to come to a decision. And since we're not raising taxes, which is what the threshold is for state law, then it's okay. I'm just saying that's an argument that can be made out there as right. to why you wouldn't necessarily want to take something this complex to the voters and try and distill it into 30-second sound bites, which obviously are taking a whole lot more than 30 seconds to figure out whether it's right or wrong.
Right. Well, Doug, I guess I'm with you on this, so contact me at the Daily Drift. Go to thedailydrift.com and you can contact me. If I can help you in some fashion, I will be happy to do so. And I'm glad that you're out there trying to alert people and educate them as well.
That sounds great. People, if they want to read a little bit more about what we're doing, can go to our website, which is www.washtenawatchdogs.com.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks, Doug. I appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Hey Dan, just out of curiosity, who are the investment bankers that will float the bond, and what will the fees be?
So our bond counsel is a gentleman by the name of John Axe with, I believe his firm is Axe in Auckland, and it's from one of the Grosse Pointes. I'm not sure if it's just Grosse Pointe or Grosse Pointe Woods or Grosse Pointe Farms or Parks or whatever. Yeah,
one of those. It's not like a Goldman Sachs or J.P. Morgan or anything.
And I specifically asked him a few weeks ago, may have been a month or so ago now, what his fees were going to be for this. And it's in the neighborhood of $500,000, just a touch under $500,000. And I'm not sure exactly how all that breaks out. So I don't want to throw too many more numbers out there. Because
it sounds low as a percentage of a $345 million bond issue.
I think there's some regulations and rules about how all this stuff gets put together. I don't know all those ins and outs of how they are compensated.
Okay, so I guess I would end by saying if you are a listener and you are worried about this, probably the best thing to do is go to ewashtenaw.org and you can talk. You'll get the phone numbers and emails for your county commissioners on the department where it says county commission, and you can call your county commissioner.
You can call me.
Or you can call Dan.
734-449-2985. You can also email me, smithd, so S-M-I-T-H-D, at ewashtenaw.org. And there's also a county phone number that is a voicemail for the entire board. That's 734-222-6666.
Okay. Really?
Four sixes, not three sixes, four sixes.
It's disturbing either way. I think I would change that phone number for sure.
You're a conspiracy theory guy.
I am. Yeah. I am. All right, well, there's the music. Commissioner Dan Smith in with us. Brandon Drake in with me today. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Talk 1600.
Hey, my blood brothers of freedom. This is Ted Nugent.
Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse.
God bless Ann Arbor and Wham Radio. I started doing interviews on Wham Radio around 1966. I celebrate and promote the God-given individual right as guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, for us to defend ourselves, to keep and bear arms. And just to make sure everyone understands what we the people understand, keep can only mean one thing. That's it's mine and you can't have it.
Wham.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. The six women on the George Zimmerman jury are deciding between murder, manslaughter, or self-defense in the shooting of Trayvon Martin.
Deliberations began yesterday afternoon. Outside the court, things are peaceful. Demonstrations of support for both Martin and Zimmerman wax and wane in the hot Florida sun. It's 88 degrees here. They debate with each other, though they remain civil as deputies keep a watchful eye.
Fox Radio's Evan Brown in Sanford, Florida. And Texas passes one of the toughest abortion measures in the nation.
House Bill 2 is finally passed. Congratulations, Senator.
The bill bans most abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Governor Rick Perry says he'll sign it into law. Opponents say it'll close all but five abortion clinics in Texas. Seven states have passed similar bills.
Fox Radio's Steve Knight. The bill also requires all abortions take place in surgical centers. Fox News. We report. You decide.
Don't miss Theron's Saturday Night Rock and Rhythm Review. From the heat of Saturday night till the wee hours of the cool early morning, your fingers will be popping. It all kicks off at 4 p.m. with a special Saturday night edition of the Bone Conduction Music Show. Then from 6 to 8, it's Eddie's Caravan with Fast Eddie. At 8 o'clock, we explore America's roots with Radio John D's Greasy Skillet. Then, Johnny Danger invites you to go cruising with the best oldies from 10 to midnight. Dan Martin takes you across the pond for the best of the UK on London Calling at midnight. Followed by Del Villarreal's Rockabilly Fest, Go Cat Go from 2 to 4. Bleach down your slicks, pop your clutch, peel out, and get rubber in all four gears with Theron's Saturday Night Rockin' Rhythm Review. It all starts Saturday afternoon at 4, right here on the musical side of Wham!
I'm Gary Wellings, chief editor of The Current and The Daily Drift. With today's internet environment, it's easy to get information overload. The best way to process this information and cut through the internet chatter is to get your news delivered in a concise and effective manner. Get the news you need to know at thedailydrift.com. Check out The Daily Drift, one of the fastest growing websites around. At The Daily Drift, I find the local, state, national, and international stories you won't get from the mainstream media, and I make it easy for you to link to them. You'll also get original common sense opinions from local writers. You can even get a free subscription that will deliver a link to your email inbox every day for free. You'll also get instant access to all archived podcasts of The Drift Radio Show and links to the best articles, opinions, and websites. Go to www.thedailydrift.com. That's the news you'll need to know at thedailydrift.com.
Greetings, my name is Pastor Yule, host of Just Joshua. I'm delighted to announce that Just Joshua will be heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. here on Wham! Come journey with us down Freedom's Highway as we discuss today's happenings from a Black conservative Judeo-Christian perspective. Every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., come journey down Freedom's Highway on Just Joshua.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
Well, welcome back, and thank you for tuning in to Catch My Drift. Along with me today, Brandon Drake.
Thank you, sir.
And Washtenaw County Commissioner Dan Smith, who was, we just got done talking about the bond issue, and we could go really deep into the weeds, but I think other people on the station will probably pick this up as well. So we'll do the best we can to get the visibility out on that. But in the meantime, let's move on to some other stuff. And our sponsor of this half hour will be the Courant newspaper, courantonline.com. Grow your business with us by advertising with us, because we've managed to grow the newspaper now from 5,000 in circulation in 2007 to 35,000 now. So we're growing. And people love the message, and we can try and get everything in that you need. So
maybe we should invest those bond proceeds in the Courant.
Yeah, well, there you go. What I could do if I had some money.
You're going to have an IPO, Gary?
You know what? Not a bad idea, but no, I can't. You know me. I don't like all the documentation. I have enough trouble dealing with the IRS. Thank you. Well, let's talk a little bit about the National Traffic Safety Board. Okay, we had the crash this week in San Francisco, and terrible thing that it was. A third little girl, student from China, just died. She was in critical condition. The first two fell out the back of the plane. One of them allegedly got run over by a rescue truck.
Oh, can you imagine?
Terrible, and whoever was driving it was probably mortified as well. So terrible, terrible thing, and this is not a joke by any stretch of the imagination, but some joker at, I'm assuming at the National Traffic Safety Board, kind of made a little fun out of this. And it made its way out and onto television. So there was a report that stated who they were releasing the names of the alleged pilots, right? Derek, let's go with that first track and listen to this.
We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Too Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao. And the NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214 when it crashed. We are working to determine exactly what roles each of them played during the landing on Saturday.
Okay, now funny, but not funny. You know, it's a tragedy, and here somebody's laughing about it. On the screen, for the and you can go to the dailydrift.com, I think I've got it up there. You can look at it, and you will see the names written out in English, and if you can't look at it and get it, what guy at the television station didn't figure that one out is beyond me. But
they knew what they were doing.
Oh, really? You think they would go that far? I mean, everyone loves a little controversy.
You know, there's some bored guy, you know, guy that's bored and said, "Hey, let's go with this."
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anyways, the National Traffic Safety Board says an intern mistakenly confirmed to the TV station racially offensive fake names for the pilots of the Asiana flight crash that crashed in San Francisco, and they came out and they apologized. And well, the TV station didn't have much choice but to go. Let's run that next track, Derek, because this was real. This was all. Honest to goodness.
I say it partly tongue-in-cheek and speculation, but
I guess.
Yeah.
Names of pilots involved in the Asiana Airlines crash, these names were not accurate despite an NTSB official in Washington confirming them late this morning. We apologize for this error.
As well you should.
This almost sounds like a Howard Stern type hoax.
It does. And, you know, when I saw it, I was like, no, just no way.
That didn't you were onto it right away.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I couldn't believe it was actually coming. I had to go check. I went and snoped it out, and I'm like, no, it's real. Oh, my gosh. Mm. But morons, terrible, terrible. And Dan, you're sitting there trying not to laugh. But it's okay. You can laugh. That's the drift. We laugh at politically incorrect things all the time, don't we, Derek?
Oh, I'm the only serious one here.
Okay, so anyways, the names of the actual Asiana airline pilots were Lee Kang Kook, K-O-O-K, right? And his co-pilot, Lee Zhong Min. All right, so there's the real names. It's not the...
Not as funny as the other ones.
Wong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Locally, I wanted to bring this to everyone's attention. MDOT is closing both the eastbound lanes on I-94 in Ann Arbor this weekend. Some big construction going on. So from N-14 split on the west side of Ann Arbor to the Carpenter Road overpass on the east side. So that's got to probably really screw up some people's...
I should point out that the MDOT and the Road Commission worked really, really hard to try and figure out how to do this construction and impact people to the least they possibly could. And it's basically a major thoroughfare, major expressway, hugely important road to this part of the area. And they need to do these repairs to it, some pretty major repairs, and they came up with this solution for these partial closures in one direction over the weekend as the best way to be able to do the repairs in a timely manner and have the least amount of impact on people. And obviously it still has impact on people, but they worked hard to try and come up with some solution, and no matter what they do, it's going to adversely impact somebody.
Right. Well, at least they didn't do it on holiday. I mean, I'm still dumbfounded when I see construction on holiday weekends going full bore.
But we got the art fair coming here this week, and they looked and they said, well, there's only football Saturdays, they can't do that. And they looked through this entire calendar, and the construction season is short in Michigan, and so they worked hard to try and come up with a scheme that would work.
Yeah, but not every game is a home game.
Well, that's true.
You know?
But they looked through the whole calendar, so they put a lot of thought into coming up with this, and I'm sure it's going to adversely impact some people, and it's road construction. No matter what they do, it hurts somebody.
One thing they need to do is repair the fence. A week and a half ago, I was on 94 westbound by Briarwood. A doe and her fawn were trying to cross the freeway.
Yeah, that's probably not a good thing.
No.
Yeah, at least for the doe and the fawn.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right, so we let the people know that's what we're supposed to do. We try at the Drift every week. I put all the information on the Daily Drift for you to look at, and it's information you don't see on the mainstream media, and that's why I do it. So the best way to really, I call it the news you need to know, and I think it's pretty important that you look at those things every day. And there was a story about Al Jazeera broke a report coming out of Pakistan about the bin Laden raid. So as everyone remembers, the U.S. went into Pakistan unannounced without any permission and killed Osama bin Laden at a compound inside Pakistan. And, of course, the Pakistanis were outraged about it.
Mm-hmm. And their commission just came out with.
Yep. Yeah. So the Abbottabad Commission, I think I'm pronouncing it right, the Abbottabad Commission set up by the Pakistani government shortly after we killed Osama bin Laden in 2011, interviewed 201 sources, including family members and various officials. And basically what it comes out is they're saying that the United States performed an act of war against Pakistan by doing this and accused themselves of gross incompetence because he was there for 10 years and, you know.
At best, gross incompetence. Yeah. I'm sure there's complicity at some level.
Right.
Absolutely.
Let's run that that track real quick, Derek, because that'll kind of put us where we need to be. Can't get it. All right. It happens sometimes.
Technical glitch.
Technical
glitch. NSA is already messing with us, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So what it comes down to is the man was there. Now, they stopped short of saying that the government of Pakistan itself let him be there.
Harbored him.
Protected officially. Him. Mm-hmm. But they did say there could very well have been rogue elements within the intelligence service or the government itself that knew he was there and was doing whatever to protect him and keep him there. You know what I mean? But again, they fault themselves for not even knowing that the CIA was inside the country.
Right.
You know, so it's one of those things. It's an actual 25-minute show on this. Mm-hmm. All right, Derek's got it ready for us. Let's run through that before we move on. Go ahead, Derek.
Pakistan to detect the presence of bin Laden for almost 10 years. It blames gross incompetence and negligence at almost every level of Pakistan's security. The commission also criticizes Pakistan's leaders for failing to detect CIA activities on its soil, and it says it couldn't rule out that rogue Pakistani intelligence officials had shielded bin Laden. Well, the report is also critical of what it calls the illegal manner in which the U.S. conducted the raid on bin Laden's compound. It describes it as an American act of war and accuses the U.S. of acting like a criminal thug.
I'll tell you what's an act of war. Pakistan. Everything they do basically is an act of war against the United States, and we pay them billions of dollars to basically wage war. They're really not too different from the Taliban that housed and harbored and protected Al-Qaeda through the 90s and, of course, up to 9/11.
Yeah, well, we're constantly...
They play both sides of the fence. They play it brilliantly. We give them money. They kill a few terrorists, and they say, for show, hey, look what we did. And we're like, oh, yeah, you're an ally. So we give them more money, when in reality, they're not our friends. They're not our ally at all. This is a rogue criminal state.
Right. Well, that's one way of looking at it. But, you know, in that part of the world, we are constantly picking the lesser of two evils. I mean, when you look at Syria, I mean, we're trying to pick which elements of the Syrian rebellion to pick, and as soon as we pick one, we find a video comes out and they're sawing the heads off people with kitchen knives. You know, did we just give that guy $500,000? Probably.
Yeah, it's like trying to pick a rat or a mongoose as a friend.
Right. I guess the important part is, and I know some people will go, Gary, why do you have Al Jazeera on your website? Well, you know what? To get the true news sometimes, you have to get out of the U.S. I mean, I find a lot of the news that I put on the Daily Drift, Russian television, RT.com, stuff out of Singapore. You have to get your news from multiple sources, number one, to verify, and number two, just to make sure you're getting a fair shake. You know what I mean? I mean,
sure.
Dan, American media? Is that all? Tell me you don't just go to ABC. I know you don't.
I haven't watched TV since the beginning of the year. I turned off my TV on New Year's Day.
And that's because you get all your information from the Daily Drift.
We know what it is, Gary. You're right. You're absolutely right. You have to get your news from multiple sources.
You do.
And you have to make your own judgment based on your own intellectual capability, your foundation of education to make your own decisions. I listen to a lot of NPR. I listen to a lot of BBC, on the internet, like the Al Jazeera story you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But I can make my own decisions.
Yes.
I can rationalize what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, I have to realize, too, what a lot of these news outlets do, especially the BBC, is they'll present 60% of the story as if it's 100%. They'll leave out the parts that will justify America's actions certain circumstances. And then you have to realize, you have to be able to dissect that and pick out, like, hey, wait a minute, they didn't point this out. They didn't point out, what if we didn't do this or did do that?
Right.
And that's, as a listener, that's what you have to be able to do and realize what the message they're trying to convey sometimes is manipulated.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, and I'm as guilty. I mean, I am neither fair. Well, I am fair, but I'm not balanced. You know, I've never claimed to be the most balanced newspaper guy around. If you send me something that I totally disagree with, I will print it. You know,
right.
I may think you're a complete chucklehead, but I'll defend your right, you know, to my death, to let you have your peace. You know what I mean? I think you're entitled to that, even if you're a complete moron. In this country, you are entitled to be a complete moron if you want to.
Let me give a quick example. We're talking about bin Laden. Let's go back to Afghanistan during the 80s when the United States helped to drive out the Soviets. And then they said that, well, the reason Afghanistan fell into such a state of chaos is because once the Soviets were out, America abandoned, quote, abandoned Afghanistan. Well, if we had stayed if we'd gone in with a military presence to help stabilize the country, what would we be called? Imperialists, invaders,
yep.
America trying to take over the world. So if we don't go in, then we abandon them and they fell apart. If we do go in, then we're evil. And you can't just send in aid workers because they're all going to be killed.
Right. Right.
So that's the kind of thing you have to think about when you hear the news and these slogans about how America's guilty for everything.
Well, I tell you what, certain. That part of the globe, I think, I mean, it was the Romans, it was Alexander the Great, it was the
British,
it was the Soviets, and now us. You can't succeed there. You really can't. And when we pull out, you know, Obama's now talking about pulling everybody out because Karzai is not happy with us. I think the Chinese will be the next ones. You know, they're already buying up all kinds of stuff because they want to get in and get the rare earth minerals. I mean, you talk about oil is one thing, but rare earth minerals for our
right.
cell phones and everything else is right there. You know what I mean? We've got a caller, Jenny from Brownstown. Jenny, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, gentlemen.
Jenny, welcome.
Hey. Well, I just want to say that I don't trust even the Detroit papers. I don't trust the local news. I don't even go 2, 4, or 7, any of those. And I don't trust the Detroit news.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good thing, Jenny. I don't know that I trust the Detroit news, too. Now, I used to deliver the Detroit news way back in the day when I was 10 or 11 years old. But
I do have a question, because I have heard that if you go to the British papers, too, you can get some more truth.
Absolutely. And I put a lot of stuff from The Guardian and The Telegraph on the Daily Drift all the time.
I'll
put
because
all the
I have a
way
of getting to those papers. It's called the Newsline. It's a thing for the blind. And
okay.
they have some international papers on there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And I'm going to start going there.
Okay. I'll have to remember that. I'll take a look at that when I get back, Jenny, and maybe there's some way I can put a link on there at the Daily Drift as well. But thank you again for calling, Jenny. Appreciate
it. Okay, thanks.
Take care, Jenny.
Take care.
See you, Brandon.
I can tell you here in in Washtenaw County in the greater Ann Arbor area, the Ann Arbor Chronicle does a real good job of providing lots of information. I know you've read some of the articles there before, and their tagline, it's like being there. So they do an excellent job of reporting as if you were at the meeting yourself, taking it all in. And they do this for city council. They do that for the Board of Commissioners and a couple other things, library boards. I think they were doing U of M and Ann Arbor Public Schools for a while.
Yeah, they are very in-depth. I mean, I put a link a couple weeks back when you first brought this to my attention. Their stories are really in-depth, you know. It's Mary Morgan, I think.
Mary Morgan and Dave Askins. And they really work hard at trying to present the information so that you can read through the information. They have links to a lot of different stuff and form your own opinion.
Right, yeah. I found nothing biased in any of the reporting. You know, it was pretty straightforward, and it was very in-depth.
You mentioned delivering the Detroit News. I used to deliver Grit newspapers. Do you remember Grit?
No.
Maybe a little before your time.
Oh, come
on. As a
kid. Seriously. Grit newspapers.
Grit newspapers.
Yeah. All right. So we've already missed another break. And at this point, Derek, I don't know that it's even worth doing one, is it? No, we're just going to go through it. Well, I was kind of hoping, beyond hope, that maybe the Zimmerman trial would break while we were doing the show. But it doesn't seem to be doing that. The trial went pretty much the way I thought it would. Dan, I don't know if you've got a
political show trial.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's exactly what it was. And you know, how the prosecution, those guys should be fired, frankly. Why would you look at the information you have, talk to the witnesses that you had, put them on stage, and watch them flop repeatedly? This, I don't think, should ever have gone to trial. I mean, everything that I've seen, now maybe the jury has seen stuff that we haven't, but it's been covered fairly well. It looks to me as the man was defending himself.
Right.
I mean, how?
Well, the two main things that I hear as to why Zimmerman is, quote, guilty is because, one, he always wanted to be a police officer. What's wrong with that? And two, he got out and followed the guy. What's wrong with that? Well, otherwise, he wouldn't be fulfilling his responsibilities as a neighborhood watch leader.
Yes, exactly.
So and
he was heading back to his car when the police said, "We don't need you to do that. Go back to your car." Well, that's when the creepy white cracker got his comeuppance from Trayvon Martin.
Well, whether you're a neighborhood watch leader or you always wanted to be a police officer, if you're a licensed gun carrier and someone jumps you and is pounding your head into the pavement, you know, what are you supposed to do? What's the point of being able to own a gun and defend yourself with stand your ground if you can't implement anything?
The fact is, he was shot at point blank range. So it's not like he was out there targeting the guy.
That wasn't a sniper
attack.
They were
obviously scuffling. Who was on top, who was on the bottom? You can leave all that to the evidence shows that Trayvon was actually on top. But to be that close tells me, point blank range, powder burns on both sets of clothing, it was a scuffle. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it being self-defense. You know, can you blame George Zimmerman for being a moron and probably should not have gotten out of his car, or should have waited for the police? Yes, but there's no law against being stupid. You know what I mean? That's just the way it is. But we'll see what's going to happen there. But in the meantime, now, the government is actually setting up First Amendment zones for people to go to protest. They're trying to control what they feel is going to be these huge protests, and they want people to don't get crazy and violent, you know, come to these little areas and protest in peace and blah, blah, blah. Well, the new Black Panther Party, though, is saying officially, we're not involved, we don't incite riots, and yet there's all kinds of tweets coming out of the new Black Panther Party. And that made me think, you know, there was another news story this week about who's more racist in America. Are black people or are white people more racist to each other? And the poll kind of showed that it's turned, that it's not always the white people who are so racist anymore, that a lot of it's kind of the black people who are a little more racist, which was very odd.
Is this surprising to you?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
I've felt like that for the last 10, 20 years.
Well, there's a nice story that Thomas Sowell, and if you're not familiar with Thomas Sowell, he's a black African-American professor, and he's conservative.
Stanford.
Yes.
Hoover Institute.
Yes, very, very conservative. And I put his story up today online. And when I thought about that, something came to mind, this Shabazz, whatever his name is, the king of the Black Panther movement. Derek, I want to hit those two tracks because it struck me that, well, this guy certainly has got to be the most racist man I've ever heard. Let's go with track one, Derek, that first couple of minutes or seconds there.
I damn it, we going to have to kill some crackers.
That's right, love it.
We going to have to kill some cracker babies. Huh? To hell with what National Geographic putting out, I'm telling you to your face here tonight, we going to have to kill some little Penelopes and some little Robbies.
Okay. I think somebody played that a year or two ago, whenever it was, but it struck me that I was like, oh, I remember that guy. He's the ultimate racist. Right. Talking about killing babies for crying out loud because of the color of their skin? Are you kidding me?
Gary, I don't know if you remember the show The Jeffersons.
Yeah.
Do you remember that spinoff of All in the Family?
Yeah.
Well, George Jefferson would say honky about every other sentence throughout this show.
Yeah.
And, you know, the laugh track's rolling and everything. So, you know, this whole thing about blacks being able to be racist and get away with it, and you know, it's funny, it's politically correct, that started, you know, in my mind, in the media with shows like that back in the mid-70s,
right,
you know, yeah, years ago. So I'm not saying that that's the origination and where, you know, it engendered, but I'm just saying it's part of the acceptance that it's okay,
right. Yeah, there's certainly a bias that some people can claim racism and others can't.
Whereas the white guy on the show, who was married to a black woman, George would just insult this guy repeatedly. That was the main theme of the show, and he would just sit there and take it, and he was, I don't remember his name, but he was like kind of this fat dolt,
yeah,
and he just would take it, and that was part of the, even as a kid, that upset me.
Right. It was part of the abuse, but it was part of the allegedly abuse, funny. Was that a Norman Mailer?
Norman Lear.
Norman Lear. Yes, Norman Lear.
Yeah, he created a whole bunch of spinoffs of All in the Family.
So, the racism, and I think that's what's behind this whole Trayvon Martin trial. You know,
absolutely,
when they first came out, they said it was a white guy killing. Well, it's not. He's Hispanic. Then CNN reported just this week they couldn't use that anymore. They said he's a white Hispanic.
Right.
Oh, come on.
I mean, sadly, if it was a black man that killed a white guy the other way around, we wouldn't even be talking about this right now. It wouldn't even make the headlines.
Well, yeah,
and it's sad that it's that way.
Yeah, the black-on-black killings in Chicago don't make the news anymore. Nobody cares.
Right.
Well, we should be caring because, you know what? There's a problem there.
Black-on-black, black-on-white, but white-on-black, you know, or Hispanic-on-black in this case, we're going
to
hear about it.
Let's move to your favorite, Edward Snowden. And Dan, I'm sure I'd like to get your opinion if you have one on Edward Snowden. You're still feeling he's the ultimate...
An absolute traitor.
Oh.
I feel that there's discussion about the NSA activities, but what Snowden has done, seeking asylum in Russia for what? A second time now, and will be granted asylum, I guess, in the near future to either Venezuela, Bolivia, or was it in Ecuador? Is that the other one?
I think Ecuador.
I mean, not exactly friends of America. I mean, this has been a propaganda. And then he keeps releasing information, you know, so now you've got, Brazil and all the other countries around there hating our guts. And in the EU, I mean, we all spy on each other. And
we do
because we can.
Yeah.
If the EU could spy on us or Brazil could spy, they would.
It's a bit facetious on any of those countries to complain about it because they do the same to us. We do that. And that's the thing is, it's now out in the open. It's now the elephant in the room.
And that's political propaganda. One reason, I think, that Snowden is a traitor.
All right.
Come back for trial. What's his name?
Mr. Snowden.
What's
Eric
his first
Snowden.
Name? Not, I wanted to say Eric, too.
Edward Snowden.
Edward. Why Eric? I always want to say Eric.
Yeah.
Come back for trial. We'll give you a fair trial.
He may. You know, you don't know.
Yeah, he's a coward.
Okay.
He won't.
Well, Dan, County Commissioner, thank you for coming in. Smith.
Yep.
And Brandon, thank you again for joining me. And Derek,
thank you
for producing the show. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care.